From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
2 hours before its release, Mayor Lori Lightfoot called watching the video of 13-year-old Adam Toledo's shooting excruciating.
No parent should ever have a video broadcast widely of their child's last moments. And let me just say that they are incredibly difficult to watch. I say that not only as a mother of a 13-year-old myself, but as a mayor who's deeply passionate about protecting our young people. We must continue to face and not ignore the fact that Chicago, as well as way too many parts of our country, has a long legacy of police violence and police misconduct that have left far too many residents, especially those who are black and brown, in a constant state of fear and pain.
That's Chicago's Mayor Lori Lightfoot talking about a police video released this week, and it's already spurring calls for more police reforms. We'll discuss that, and also how is the state doing in the battle against the pandemic. That and more coming up on State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, and our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Emeritus Professor and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. He's also a longtime Statehouse reporter and observer. Also with us, Hannah Meisel, NPR Illinois Statehouse editor. And joining us today, Rachel Hinton. She covers government and politics for the Chicago Sun-Times. Rachel, it's always good to have you back with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Well, before we move on to the other topics, we have to address, I think, the release of this video. It showed a Chicago police officer fatally shooting a 13-year-old boy. This happened last month. The video was just released this week. It appears to show the boy raising his hands, complying with police orders, as he was shot. Rachel, you're in Chicago, and I guess first, what do we know about this case as we sat down to record this show here on Friday morning from the information that's been released so far?
Yeah, so the video of the shooting was released yesterday. Initially, there were claims, there were reports that the young man had a gun in his hand when he was shot. The video doesn't show that. It shows him initially, run away from police officers. He does stop. He raises his hands as the officer tells him to put his hands up, and then he is shot. There was no gun in his hand at the time. There was a gun recovered on the scene in a different video that was released yesterday. It appears that maybe he threw it behind a fence or something of that sort. But those are the facts really that we have right now, or the facts that we're trying to suss out and determine what is true, what's not, how did this play out, the series of events. The release of the video sparked, protests. There were people, in the streets downtown, largely peaceful protests, different than, some of the protests and the looting, that we saw in the summer, or rather, the protests this time were not followed by looting, similar looting that we saw. But I think people are still really reeling from this video, from the shooting, and trying to determine what's next. How do we deal with this?
And I don't want to speculate because an investigation is underway, and we don't want to downplay the fact that a 13-year-old was killed here, but this is a show about government and politics, and many politicians have already come out saying it shows the need for change. I believe the governor talked about the need for justice, maybe putting more pressure also on Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot. What appears to be the next step from both a political or a legislative standpoint because of this issue?
Well, Mayor Lori Lightfoot has talked about wanting a foot chase policy, a more formal one. I believe right now the Chicago Police Department doesn't have a formal foot chase policy. It has a safety bulletin, basically a guideline for police officers if they are engaging in a foot chase. We had a story today in the Sun-Times about, foot chases and how that forces police officers to make quick decisions, in crazy moments, life or death situations. So I think that we might see policy legislation around that. Also, legislation around qualified immunity, which was already introduced in the House. One of the state lawmakers, Representative LaShawn Ford, said now is the time, to really get this through the House, to get this through the legislature, to begin trying to reform policing and the relationship police have with communities.
Hannah, the legislature has been in this week in Springfield, and of course this being released at the same time, has there been reaction from Illinois lawmakers also?
Yes, as after the video was released on Thursday afternoon, you have the statements from folks like Speaker Chris Welch and Senate President Don Harmon and the governor and other folks. But then as the session opened on Friday morning, the House took the time to, the speaker addressed the video, and Edgar Gonzalez, who represents actually the district that Adam Toledo lived in, and the shooting happened, I guess, four blocks from his house. He gave an impassioned speech, and basically, I mean, what we hear from him and is the frustration that, they're sent to Springfield to do things, to be policymakers, to make life better for Illinoisans. And he feels like, what are we supposed to do when, a 13-year-old boy, he complies with police orders to, to stop and put his hands up, and he still gets shot. So his, his point was, what are we supposed to do? I'm at a loss. And then we also heard from Representative Lakeisha Collins, a new state rep, who, she has three young boys, and she said raising three young Black boys in Chicago is, one of the hardest things. You have to prepare them for things that they're not ready for. And, she addressed in the video, Adam looks very, very scared. And she, she said, I see that in my boys. It's just striking the similarities, and I don't want that to end up, but I know, it could be easily, it could end up that way. So Speaker Welch is making grief counselors available next week for members who, should they need it. And that's very interesting. I've never heard of anything remotely like that. I mean, I wasn't around, for example, when a guard at the Capitol was fatally shot, about, 15 years ago. Very interesting, compassionate move there.
Charlie, this situation, I mean, let's first of all just admit, police have a very difficult job, and Chicago is a very difficult city to be a police officer in. But this incident, this is just one in many that has really led to this long history of mistrust among many communities, Black and brown communities especially, and the Chicago Police Department. And no matter what this investigation shows, this is not going to help that relationship, I would think.
Yeah, it's a very difficult situation, and no matter what the ultimate outcome will be, the fact is, here's a 13-year-old kid who was shot fatally by a police officer when, from the video, it appears he was doing what the officer told him to. He stopped, he turned, he raised his hands. There did not appear to be a gun in his hands, but it all happened so quickly, I'm sure the officer in the back of his mind was thinking, well, I better be ready because he's going to turn and shoot me. And so he shot him before he, just almost as a reaction, before his brain kicked in. And obviously I'm speculating. I wasn't there. I don't know what the mood of the person was. But one thing that struck me, how come it is so easy for people to get guns in Chicago? And from all the indications of this incident, it was not Adam who had purchased the gun or gotten the gun. He was with an older man who gave him the gun. Then Adam threw it away. But how much better it would be if there were fewer guns, and if we had tougher gun laws that made it more difficult for people to buy guns, for people to transport them across state lines. Illinois has pretty stringent requirements, more so than our neighboring states. But there are uncounted instances of people going to Indiana, for example, stocking up on guns, bringing them back to Illinois and selling them on the street. That's an issue that I think we have to address as a nation. We just had another mass shooting just the other day. And the people wring their hands and say, oh, there's nothing we can do about it. But it makes you wonder, why is it that in the United States, of all the developed nations, we have much higher level of these mass shootings than anybody in the European Union, anyone in Canada? You just have to shake your head.
Well, Rachel, the mayor mentioned the what she was calling sort of the root causes of these types of things, and she mentioned the gun crime issue in Chicago. Is this likely to spur any change there from, you know, efforts we've seen before?
I guess I would be hesitant to say yes or no. I think, as with these shootings, like whenever they happen, there's a push for change, or there's a lot of talk about change. There's a lot of talk about things that can be reformed. A lot of policies are floated, but whether or not those policies, you know, get turned into, whether or not those ideas get turned into legislation, and then that legislation comes, you know, to the floor of the city council or the legislature, and then it is passed, I think that remains a question. I guess I don't know right now what that would look like, or whether or not it's possible to do with the at this time.
You're listening to State Week. I'm Sean Crawford, and joining us this week, we have our State House editor Hannah Meisel. We also have Charlie Wheeler and Rachel Hinton of the Chicago Sun-Times. And Hannah, let me go to you, because let's switch off to the pandemic, because we've been following this for months now, but we've been watching here over the last few weeks, seeing the numbers headed in the wrong direction. And we're a week later. Where do things stand in the state of Illinois' efforts to battle back against this pandemic?
Well, we're still seeing those metrics climb in the wrong direction, but there are maybe some hints, and I don't want to, you know, speak out of turn, but there are. It's possible that it's slowing down, which would be good news. But, you know, still, that means that we have to overcome this surge, and, you know, things like hospitalizations and deaths are lagging indicators, and unfortunately means that more people got sick and more people will die. And, you know, we didn't want to get to that place. Obviously, we would have liked to keep going down the slide that we were on in early March. But, you know, in terms of vaccine rollouts, we are approaching a quarter of the entire population of Illinois, you know, being fully vaccinated, which is really good news. You know, of course, as we talked about on the show, herd immunity means between 70 and 90% of folks getting fully vaccinated. And we know, obviously, that kids under 16 are not approved for any of the three vaccines that are out there. We are seeing higher vaccination numbers, you know, because in a lot of March, we saw kind of a plateau, but we are actually seeing pickup, which is good news, because this is the first week that everyone in Illinois, regardless of age, is eligible for a shot. The other thing that happened this week that was kind of a surprise was the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. CDC and the FDA recommended a pause in using it. And so in Illinois, you know, that actually doesn't affect us too much. We already weren't using a ton of Johnson & Johnson, partially because of a mix up in a warehouse somewhere out east a couple weeks ago. And so we weren't getting a lot of the J&J vaccine anyway. And for this upcoming week, about 1% of the total federal shipment to Illinois was supposed to be J&J. So doesn't affect us too much. As a result, the state will send, for the first time, the city of Chicago some doses. The city has been kind of behind in, you know, it's been very difficult to get vaccine appointment in the city proper. The governor has encouraged people who live in the city of Chicago to go to a mass vaccination site, say in Cook County, or, you know, even further out. Things are looking okay at the state level. Peoria, though, lots and lots of kind of mysteriously high positivity rates in those areas. And I've heard, I have not done direct reporting on this, but from reporting others have done, seems to be the one of the variants has gotten hold there.
Hannah, just real quick, has the governor talked about mitigations and what, you know, those pockets like Peoria and that area? Could we see some type of, you know, stay-at-home order or something like that being put into place in some of these regions?
Right. So a couple of regions actually do technically qualify for mitigations under the rules that the Pritzker put out last summer, and that, you know, ended up with mitigations throughout much of the fall and winter during our second surge. So I asked the governor's office this week if we could be in for more mitigations. And they said that because, you know, so many people are getting vaccinated, they're revisiting the conversation about mitigations. And so if there were to be any mitigations, I suspect they would look different than what we saw in the fall and winter.
Also in the news this week, former Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan, this time for the legal tab that he is racking up. Rachel, you reported on this. How much has been spent so far, and do we know much more about, you know, what that all means?
Well, since early 2018, you know, he spent around or nearly $6.8 million on legal fees. We know that through campaign finance records that he has submitted to the state. A name that commonly appears is Katten Luchin. If, you know, Capital Facts, Rich Miller, he wrote today in his blog that that law firm typically handles white collar crimes. It's not entirely clear why Madigan has spent, he spent $2 million alone in his most recent campaign filing. He's paid Katten Luchin over $2 million. It's not entirely clear why he's done that. His spokeswoman didn't respond to a request for comment, neither did the law firm. But, you know, I think that it's fair to look at this in the light or within the realm of this ComEd scandal that started last summer. Though Madigan hasn't been charged with any crime, he was implicated in this years-long bribery scheme with ComEd, in which the utility company was sending, you know, giving his associates money for doing little to no work. Madigan has said time and time again that he is innocent. He's never, you know, committed any sort of crime. But these legal fees, I feel like, need to be looked at or are an interesting piece of this overall story on this scandal.
Yeah, and Shirley, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot. I don't think you know. I know I don't know where things stand with that investigation. But the fact that this much money is being spent, even continuing to be spent, is sort of a signal to me that this investigation is not necessarily done.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's going to be ongoing for a while yet. And the U.S. Attorney's Office is in charge of the whole thing, and he's not tipping his hand. And I suspect that, as Rachel said, Madigan has money that he's indicating that he's going to be using for legal representation going well into the future. And I obviously have no clue where this is going to end up or when it's going to end up. Although I suspect if U.S. Attorney John Lausch actually had the goods, so to speak, on Mike Madigan, we would have heard about it already.
Well, speaking of a lot of money, the state of Illinois is expected to get billions from the federal stimulus package. And we have already heard now, at least on record, from the governor, the Speaker of the House, and the Senate president, all Democrats, about what they think and where they think that money should be spent. And Hannah, kind of fill us in on what they're talking about.
Right. The governor and Senate President Don Harmon and House Speaker Chris Welch penned a joint op-ed in Crane's Chicago Business this week saying that the $7 billion that the state is going to come into from this American Rescue Plan, $7.5 billion in one-time support from the American Rescue Plan, at least, you know, $2.5 billion of that will, you know, go to cover our short-term debt. If you remember, the state has borrowed a couple different times from the Federal Reserve. It was a program that was made available to states, kind of early on in the pandemic that we could borrow. And I think Illinois is still the only state that actually did that. And so that's a significant chunk of money. It got us through you know, the end of fiscal year 2020 and some of this fiscal year also. But the other part of the op-ed, you know, kind of vague, kind of mealy-mouthed, we have to put families and job creation first and, you know, spur, you know, economic activity in that kind of way. And they pat themselves on the back for, you know, doing a good job with COVID restrictions and said that that's why the state is in better on a better fiscal footing than expected. But kind of, you know, like I said, mealy-mouthed, we don't really know the direction, you know, that will, or we don't know the specific outlines that will go. And, you know, I suspect we won't really know until at least a month from now at the end of May when the budget really gets put together. But, you know, I think it's interesting that they decide to put out this joint op-ed because, you know, they definitely have members in those caucuses who are, you know, though they are Democrats, they're not happy with the governor's proposed budget, you know, in February, especially the piece where he said he was not going to, you know, for the second year in a row, follow through on putting $350 million more into schools. And instead, he is leaning on federal money for, you know, schools.
Charlie, your thoughts on what they had to say or how this money, you know, putting some of this debt up front and trying to pay that off. I mean, is that the proper approach here in your mind?
Yeah, I think it is. And besides the $2.5 billion we owe to the feds that Hannah mentioned, according to the comptroller Susana Mendoza's website, we also owe roughly $1 billion to special funds in Illinois. Illinois has something like 800 individual funds, and the one that we all pay the most attention to is what's called the general funds. It's a collection of half a dozen different accounts that pay for most of the day-to-day expenses of state government. It's called the checkbook account. But to help beef up that account, we borrowed money from the special funds, so we owe $1 billion to them. We also owe $400 million to the state treasurer from a fund that he has that we tap to help us get through some cash flow crises. And the comptroller has suggested, or has asked, has almost ordered that we pay off these debts first, a total of almost $4 billion, which is better than half of the $7.5 billion we're going to get. And then the governor and the legislative leaders, as Hannah said, want to use the money for economic development stuff, infrastructure, supporting small businesses, helping education and healthcare, those kinds of issues. And one of the questions will be, again, will we use some of that money, $350 million of it, to pay into the evidence-based funding formula for K-12 schools? Or are we going to instead rely on federal help to kind of make up that shortfall? So all this is stuff we get to watch for in the next month and a half.
Well, another thing we're watching for involves the state's largest school district, the Chicago Public Schools. And there is legislation that we've talked about on the show before. There's been some updates on it, though, regarding an elected Chicago school board. Rachel, you're following that. What is the latest?
Yeah, so House Bill 2908, which is one bill that would create an elected school board that's come up during this session, passed through the House yesterday. It can now, you know, go on to the Senate, where they will begin their three readings of that bill and potentially, you know, vote for it and potentially help create an elected school board. The other bill, the Senate bill, the number of which escapes me right now, passed through a Senate committee. And though it passed through that committee and can now technically advance to the Senate floor for debate and discussion and a vote, some members, including Senate Majority Leader Kimberly Lightford, said that they wanted to see more of the issues and concerns around that bill addressed before it advances. Senator Lightford is sponsoring an amendment that is supported by Mayor Lori Lightfoot that would create a hybrid school board, meaning that Mayor Lightfoot would appoint most of the members of that board, but I believe three, I think initially two members would be elected and then that number would grow or increase to three later on. Things that I've already started to hear that some people are not pleased with that.
And just real quick here, Rachel, but is the mayor, does she still have the clout to get what she wants here in Springfield, or is that started to dim a little bit?
I think that, you know, this elected school board bill that she's pushing in Springfield will be a real thing to watch. The question of clout with the mayor has been a big one. There have been several initiatives that she's wanted that have fallen to the wayside, that haven't been done. And so it doesn't seem like she does have the clout. It doesn't seem like she does have the ear of, you know, the prominent representatives or senators. But I would say, you know, getting Senator Lightford to support this bill, to sponsor it, is a good step. But now, you know, we have to see what comes of it.
All right. It's time for our notes from the field. And Hannah, let's start with you.
So while we were recording this, actually, the Democratic Party of Illinois put out a statement saying that they have asked for a Federal Election Commission opinion on whether Congresswoman Robin Kelly can actually raise money. And if you remember back in February, when there was, you know, a two-way race to be the next chair of the DPI after Mike Madigan resigned from the party, you know, the crux of the question is that Robin Kelly, a sitting congresswoman, you know, was thought that she couldn't raise money. And, you know, a top lawyer who does this sort of thing said no, that she couldn't. She went on to win that race anyway. She hasn't actually been in charge of the accounts. And so for the time being, while the DPI waits for the opinion of the Federal Election Commission, Attorney Michael Dorf has been put in charge of the funds.
All right. And Rachel?
This week, the Attorney General's office had their computer network compromised. They spokespeople for that office have not said exactly what compromised means. Does that mean a hack? Does it mean a breach? Does that mean the Russians are involved? But I've been following that, looking into that, because the Attorney General's office handles sensitive information. Was any of that information touched by this compromise? We don't know yet, but that's a thing to follow and keep an eye on in the future.
All right, and Charlie.
The state is now going to provide Medicaid benefits to eligible mothers for up to 12 months after the birth of their child, which is a big improvement from the previous 60-day limit. Now, Governor Pritzker's administration announced this week that it had received approval from the federal government, from the Federal Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, to extend that benefit period. Legislation was passed a couple years ago to do that as part of an initiative to try and help reduce the number of infant mortality and maternal mortality, especially among people of color, women of color.
All right, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Anna Meisel, and Rachel Hinton of the Chicago Sun-Times. You can get a podcast of our show. It's at nprillinois.org or through the NPR One app. And join us next time. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.